Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Jovan, we have arrived at the All-Star break, and that means it is a time for reflection, rumination, and a bit of a reality check for the Lakers. This is the Forum Club. I'm Bill Oram, joined by Jovan Buha, and the Lakers are currently 4 games under .500 going into the All-Star break. LeBron James is probably on a plane to Cleveland as we speak. Lakers are coming off probably their best win of the year, Jovan, 106-101 over the Utah Jazz. But as I wrote today, may have also suffered their biggest loss of the season in the process, watching Anthony Davis writhing on the floor after landing on Rudy Gobert's foot. Certainly seems to foreshadow a significant stretch of missed games for him. As we head into this break, Jovan, where are you on the state of the Lakers, and how much positivity do you take from that really remarkable comeback win against a streaking Utah team versus the harsh reality of another injury for AD?
Yeah, well, I just wrote about this as well, and I tried to focus more on the positivity of the last week or so, where it's felt like there's been a funk around this team for a majority of the season. And LeBron recently addressed it a couple weeks ago, saying that there was a fog. And it did feel like the trade deadline kind of parted the clouds, so to speak, right? Where at least energetically, I feel like the vibe around the team has been much better in the last week. And now it's easy to kind of say that when you're basically not playing games and losing. And you know, it's kind of gone hand in hand with the Lakers, where there is these moments of positivity, and then there's a setback, and it's AD goes down, LeBron goes down, someone gets COVID, and or someone, you know, they lose a close game that they probably should have won. And like, there's always been some sort of setback this season. And naturally, you know, with all the positive vibes and all the, you know, we're getting practice time and, you know, we're feeling energetic and all this stuff. Of course, AD has to go down when he's having one of his best halves of the season, frankly, and one of his best starts. It might have been his best start to a game this season, had 15 points in the first quarter. Of course, he goes down, and you know, it looks like the Lakers are going to lose. They're going to enter the break 6 games under .500 and really just sort of on a sour note. And they rally and beat Utah. And I do think some of this was matchup driven, where we know the Jazz have struggled to contain effective small ball units in the past couple seasons. And you know, going back to last year when they lost to the Clippers without Kawhi Leonard, those last couple games, the Clippers just went small and attacked Rudy Gobert. And you saw the Lakers do that down the stretch. We saw the Lakers do this a month ago, where AD wasn't even playing in that game, and they were able to draw out Rudy Gobert. You know, bring him away from the basket, include him in pick and roll coverages, and really expose the Jazz and their limitations that way. So I do think part of this was a matchup thing. I think against a different opponent of a similar caliber that had a better, you know, kind of ability to adapt to the way the Lakers were attacking them, I think maybe the Lakers lose that game, but that wasn't the case. And the Lakers won, and they showed a level of resiliency that they really have not showed that often this season. So on the one, like, I guess I'm remaining cautiously optimistic in the sense of, like, I do feel like there is something there with maybe the vibe is better now that no one on this team can be traded. But if AD is out for a month or something like that, like, yeah, that's really bad, and they're going to lose games, and they might be the 10 seed, you know, enter having to win twice in the play-in tournament. So like, I'm going to reserve some judgment until I know the full diagnosis for AD and kind of where that's at. But I will say, for the first time, seemingly since the beginning of the season, I felt some level of positivity, like, from the team. Like, we have not felt that. There has been a funk. There has been a fog. And I would say it's been at least encouraging to feel like the team is saying positive things and actually meaning it, versus most of the season where they've been saying it, but you haven't really gotten that vibe.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting dichotomy because you're right. Like, there has been this energy over the last two games that has been completely different. And, you know, the loss to Portland was such a deflating sort of slap in the face, I think. You know, that was a game the Lakers had won several different ways. And then all of a sudden, you know, Anthony Simons comes out and gets wildly hot. And you know, the Lakers drop one they just should not have lost. Golden State, you know, that energy you're talking about, LeBron had free throws to tie the game late, missed them. You know, he had a terrible fourth quarter, but everybody else was really good, including Russell Westbrook. And then last night, you know, you do it without Anthony Davis and you come back from like 12 down with about 6.5 minutes left. Really, really impressive stuff. But, you know, you're right. I mean, the question is Anthony Davis, and to what extent is this injury going to further hamper the Lakers' ability, not just to win games and you know, build some momentum and you know, improve their standing in the West, but to build the chemistry that they've been talking about needing all year. I think last night was just the 20th time that LeBron, AD, and Russell Westbrook all started a game together. It just hasn't been a part of this season, those three being on the court. And, you know, I think that there was reason to hope that they could, over these last 25 games, finally do that. And you start talking about a serious ankle sprain, and we haven't gotten the results from the MRI yet. I'm told, you know, we're recording this on a Thursday. I'm told that those will be coming at some point today. So maybe we'll get really lucky and it'll come while we're recording this podcast. But if we're talking about if we're talking about like a grade three sprain, you know, that can be 4 to 6 weeks. It can be longer. You know, you go back a few years, 2019, Lonzo Ball sprained his ankle in Houston, I think on January 15th, and it knocked him out for the season. Anthony Davis is a guy that obviously has a lot more incentive to get out there and play. But an ankle sprain is not always the minor injury it kind of sounds like. I mean, you're talking about torn ligaments. You're talking about, you know, potentially a high. It didn't look like a high ankle sprain in the way LeBron's injury last year was, the one that cost him 20 games. But, you know, we could be talking, you know, and I hate to be the voice of doom here, but you could be talking about 4 weeks, you know. You could be talking about 6 weeks, and that could take you through the rest of the regular season. It could take you to the end of March. And at that point, you know, what is the Lakers' position at that point? I mean, LeBron has, even with a healthy AD, kind of needed to be that guy for the Lakers. I mean, case in point, last night was his 23rd straight game with 25 points or more. So, I mean, he's obviously been doing it all for them, but I am curious to see what a month of Anthony Davis less basketball would look like for this team. And, you know, especially as they are still trying to find a rhythm. But all that said, I mean, going into the All-Star break with the energy you're describing, going into the All-Star break with a win like this against Utah, like, completely changes the tenor and the conversation around this team for the final month and a half of the season than if it had been a loss. And a loss, by the way, that, you know, looked almost certain. I mean, there was very little reason to forecast that the Lakers were going to be able to make the push down the stretch that they did. LeBron went into hero mode. You know, the Jazz got cold at an inopportune time. Royce O'Neal with a couple of really bad turnovers for Utah. So, I mean, it really lined up for the Lakers. But, you know, over the next 10 days while the Lakers are on break, you know, it can sort of be a pause. And it's, you know, obviously the team is not in a great position, but it's not going to be the doom and gloom that I think it would have been if it was a loss and they lost AD. I think the tone over the next 10 days can be a little more, a little calmer.
Yeah. And honestly, like, I think this group needs some type of positive, like, I know it sounds a little corny, but it's like, they just have been dealt blow after blow. And obviously a lot of it has been self-inflicted with the roster construction and, you know, some of the rotational and lineup stuff. And there's been a lot of factors that have gone into this, you know, disappointing season. But I mean, as corny as it sounds, like, again, like, I do think there is a difference to your point of entering the All-Star break having lost, and especially losing, because I think, and you know, there's some placebo effect here, right? Where now that the trade deadline's gone, they are kind of used. I mean, you've heard it in every press conference that they've had since then, is everyone's talking about the energy and the spirit and fresh start and this and that. And like, you know, technically that's not true, right? Like they are 27-31. They're four games under 500. Like this has been a disappointing season from an objective sense. And realistically, they're probably going to be the 9 or 10 seed and have to win two games in the play-in tournament to then go play the Phoenix Suns and lose in five games. Like, there isn't much to be optimistic about. But I think if they're kind of feeding that to themselves and kind of saying like, hey, this is a fresh start, this is a blank slate, and like let's like make the most of it, I think losing that Utah game would have been so deflating, and it would have just been, you know, like we can't catch a break and this season's kind of like over. And, and again, it still kind of is, because I don't think, you know, if they're the 9 or 10 seed, like they're not beating the Phoenix Suns in round one. And I don't think they're beating the Golden State Warriors either. So,
yeah.
Like realistically, this is headed for the Lakers in the play-in and they lose in five games to the Warriors or the Suns, and maybe in like a best case scenario push it to like six because they have LeBron and AD and those guys are playing out of their minds, and you know, like that's like the best case scenario. But I think for this team to turn it around, whatever that looks like, and I don't even know anymore what that looks like, they've got to believe kind of their own you know what they're selling, and they're selling that this is a fresh start, and it wouldn't have mattered had they lost both of the games in a week span. So to me, again, and I'm not saying like even a fresh start, I don't even know what that means anymore, because I feel like we've had this conversation on this podcast every single week, and it's always they win a couple games, they lose a couple games, and I no longer know what it means for this team to turn their season around, but whatever that looks like is only possible if they truly believe that. And I felt a sense of belief that was not there as recently as like 2 weeks ago.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I think if they had lost this game, even though they started really, really well, but a lot of that could be sort of attributed to the way Anthony Davis was playing. If they had lost that game and lost AD, it would have, to me, really undercut all the talk about you know, positive vibes and a new energy and, you know, this like level of focus, and now that they still have that, so that is not insignificant. But there is the broader point, like to what end in this season? So you've got LeBron James, who's going out there and, you know, and just basically accelerating on the course to overtake Karl Malone and eventually Kareem Abdul-Jabbar on the all-time scoring list. He's on his way. You know, that seems like a foregone conclusion at this point. Carl this year, Kareem maybe in the middle of next year, and you know, but other than that, I mean, this is not a Lakers team that, you know, you can envision, you know, winning a championship. And, you know, you have to hold them to their own standard. You know, this team was, I mean, Rob Pelinka said in the press conference when they brought Russell Westbrook in that, you know, that they are obsessed with winning their 18th championship, and that they believe that this was the move to bring in Russell Westbrook that got them the closest to it. And that has not been true. And, you know, that is something that cannot be forgotten. It has to be a level of accountability, regardless of, you know, a nice win against Utah, regardless of who's injured, regardless of, you know, having to navigate the play-in. You know, it's just, it hasn't worked. I mean, this whole thing just has not worked. Now, I will say, though, AD getting injured as the Lakers really, you know, seem to be gaining a little bit of at least mental or emotional momentum is just par for the course of this season. You know, what I wrote in my story today at The Athletic was, you know, basically this is not a team that can have nice things, right? Like whenever, you know, something good happens for this Lakers team, you can count on there being a corresponding bad thing. And that has just been the case. You know, the idea of, you know, one step forward, two steps back all year. And, you know, you hope for a good diagnosis on AD's ankle. Obviously, the fact that you have, you know, 10 days basically until the next game for him to get a head start on his rehab is helpful. You know, if it's a 6 week, let's say it's a 6 week injury, well, that's only going to be 5 weeks of games missed because he gets a week without games to rehab. That is, you know, that is a bit of a, you know, a silver lining to this, as opposed to him having that injury, you know, in the first game back, let's say. So, you know, you can find that positive. If it's a 2 week injury, then that feels even more meaningful. So really it's just, you know, what is the prognosis for Anthony Davis? Is he going to be able to get back on the floor this season? Is he going to be able to get back on the floor with meaningful time left in the regular season? And, you know, because this does have a feel of last year where, remember, Anthony Davis got hurt in February. He was out for 2 months. While he was out, LeBron got hurt. He was out for, you know, more 6 weeks. And it was really about getting healthy for the playoffs and then trying to make a run. But the difference between last year's team and this year's team is there was a point where last year the Lakers looked like the best team in the league. You know, they were number two in the West without Anthony Davis when LeBron, you know, sprained his ankle. They looked like a team that, you know, was poised to make a deep run and at least be in the mix in the Western Conference. Mm-hmm. This Lakers team has never looked like that. With the exception of, you know, these two games against Utah and the game in Golden State, they have not looked the part of a contender. And they've never been at the top of the West. They've never been, you know, in the top three or four in the West, you know, once they've gotten, you know, games under their belt. They've been in fifth, sixth, seventh, and now ninth. And as you said, just seems to be their lot for the season, and it's going to have to come down to the play-in. We always talk about the All-Star break as the midway point of the season. People say, oh, get ready for the second half. That's obviously not true, right? I mean, we are 47? Wait, I can't do math. 57, we're 57 games into the season. 57 games into an 82-game season. There's 25 games left. But let's treat this as a break and an opportunity to look back a little bit. Give me two or three things, Jovan, that you have liked this season that have pleasantly surprised you.
Can we start with one?
I got two or three. We may not be able to have three each, but I've got three.
I would say, you know, first and foremost, as someone who considers themselves a you know, basketball fan and purist, like, just experiencing this season from LeBron has been really special, and just kind of, I think it's one of those things that, I don't know how you feel, but I assume you kind of feel similarly. Like, when, you know, 20 years from now, 30 years from now, when we're looking back on our careers and kind of wherever they've gone, I'm going to look fondly upon, you know, covering who I think is the greatest player of all time, and at worst is the second best player of all time. Like, I think that has just been a fun, you know, on a personal level, that has just been fun to witness, you know, I feel like I'm making a pun, to witness his greatness, right? Like, it's been really cool. And you know, it's one of those things that, as, again, just someone who tries to kind of study the history of the game, like, I know that this is one of those things that it is really special that we get to cover, you know, one of the greatest players ever. And I would say two and three, Malik Monk has been really fun. That's been a fun story that, I was not very optimistic on the Malik Monk front. I just thought that you add Russ, you add Taylor, or, you know, you re-sign Taylor, you add Kendrick, even a guy like Wayne who kind of served a purpose as a sharpshooter. Like, I was like, I don't see where the minutes are for Malik Monk. You know, he kind of faded out of Charlotte, and I was like, I don't, but he's been, you know, arguably the story of the season, or one of them, at least for this team in terms of like a positive story. And then I would say Austin Reeves and Stanley Johnson to some extent. So, like, you, like, individual players and kind of their stories have been fun, but there hasn't really been fun stretches of the season for me, because, as Frank said a couple days ago, like, what, they've won more than three games in a row, I think, once. They had a four-game winning streak, and otherwise it's just been stop-start. So I would say LeBron and then some of the younger guys and them really stepping up in ways that we didn't necessarily expect.
Also posit that on a team that has, you know, what, five Hall of Famers at this point, or maybe it's four after the Rondo trade. What are we at? Dwight, LeBron, AD, Carmelo.
It's five. Well, White, I think AD's in it's the AD. Big three plus Dwight and Melo.
Yeah. Russ. I forgot Russ. So you're at five Hall of Famers. You know, you had seven when the team was first assembled before Gasol got waived or traded, and Rondo was on the team. The fact that that we can sit here, you know, so deep into the season and say the most enjoyable part of the season has been, you know, Austin Reeves and Malik Monk probably speaks to how far off script this season has gone. But I mean, you're obviously right. Like, those guys have been delightful. And the fact that they're both, like, you know, young guys from Arkansas who, you know, do have a little bit of a shared path and makes it an even, you know, more enjoyable story. But I mean, yeah, you're right. I mean, everything else about this season has been a slog, you know. And when you talk about, you know, the flip side of it, disappointments, right? You obviously talk about, you know, the injuries, you know, not being able to get, you know, consistent, you know, lineups on the floor, and being able to, you know, form a consistent identity, I think has been a huge problem in this season. Something, by the way, I think the Lakers did to themselves. Injuries aside, the Lakers had the plan to play small. That's what they were going to do coming into the year with Anthony Davis at center. And then I don't know if they got too clever or if they thought that they could sort of grow into that identity. But starting the season with DeAndre Jordan, to me, now just sort of feels like a waste of time. You know, the idea that you were going to go big and kind of really assert yourself as this big physical team, you know, was never going to be your identity. Not when you needed to space the floor in the way you do with Russell Westbrook. That, you know, given how few opportunities you've had to have your big three together, that feels like you wasted precious opportunities to have them play in their idealized sort of roles. Talen Horton-Tucker has been a pretty underwhelming presence this year, although he has been better over the last few games. But, you know, when you consider the fact that they gave him $10 million to kind of be the Alex Caruso replacement, and he hasn't been that. You know, he has not been that caliber of contributor yet, that night in, night out defensive menace. Now, he had some, I really do want to stress, I thought he had some really nice moments defensively against the Jazz. And you know, and Austin Reeves, like you said, I mean, he has become a defensive force as well. And I mentioned the Royce O'Neal turnovers. One of those was, I mean, and I would say probably the game sealing turnover was, you know, Austin Reeves on the closeout of Royce O'Neal in the corner, and he, you know, kind of jumped past him on the pump fake, but then stuck with the play, and Royce went up to shoot it after the pump fake, and realized he had Austin like behind him about to block it, and that's what forced him into making the wayward pass that Malik Monk grabbed and ended up, you know, getting fouled and kind of putting, you know, kind of turning it into a free throw game for the Jazz. And, you know, so, you know, Austin Reeves has, you know, filled some of that void, but, you know, the fact that the Lakers just haven't been able to be the team that they sort of schematically envisioned, you know, in terms of, you know, Trevor Ariza hasn't, you know, had the time on the floor to be the contributor they imagined. You know, it's just been, and I feel for Frank Vogel too, because he has, I think, taken heat for not finding a consistent lineup. But I mean, I don't know how much more consistent of a lineup he could be putting out there when you look at everything this team has endured, guys in and out of the lineups, the dramatic swings. Like, it's like you either go big and completely concede, you know, your offensive spacing, or you go a little smaller and you lose that rim protection and you become a defensive, you know, disaster. There's not a great in between for this Lakers team. And that's kind of been the thing that Frank has dealt with this year, is like, which dramatic polar end of this do I commit to in this particular matchup before then swinging back the other way and then trying to, you know, among, you know, your Avery Bradley, Malik Monk, you know, THT, Austin Reeves, Trevor Ariza, Stanley Johnson's, you know, kind of your two-way guys, who's going to give you the most on both ends and kind of help you straddle those two things the best. And that's just been such a work in progress.
Yeah, I'm going to butcher this and I apologize. So I don't remember who tweeted this, but I saw this tweet before the game yesterday where I think the Lakers are minus 90 in DeAndre Jordan's minutes this season. and they are plus four when he is off the floor overall. So, you know, extrapolate that to the entire season, and it's kind of like, you know, what could, like, I mean, I agree. Like, I think the Deion, like, the thing I will, you know, personally hold the most, like, I've been on team. I think Frank is criticized too much, and too, you know, it's too easy to put it on him when, to me, it's more of a roster construction issue more than anything. But the one thing I think you can lay at Frank's feet is that DeAndre Jordan pretty quickly into the season was clearly not only not a rotation player, but probably not an NBA player anymore. And he continued to start him and play him 12 to 15 minutes a night that the Lakers were just getting clobbered in. And,
yeah.
You know, if he wanted to remain big, I think he should have gone to Dwight. And we saw, I mean, even Dwight now at this point isn't really a rotation, you know, barely a rotation guy, but he at least, there were some of those effective stretches with the Dwight lineups where those lineups were just better than the DeAndre lineup. So that would be one thing. I think, and I know you touched on it, but like to me, the biggest disappointment of the season is Russ. And it's just, Russ was supposed to be, you mortgage your depth and your assets for a third star for instances like the Lakers have had this season where LeBron is out or where AD is out. And it's like, okay, Russ, you know, we know it's not the best fit when you're the third guy and you like to have the ball and you're a rhythm guy, and it's not the best fit. But when LeBron or AD is out, you should be Russell Westbrook. And we've seen some big performances, we've seen some big numbers, but it has not translated to winning. And that to me is, you know, and again, I think part of it is the roster construction, that this team, some of the veterans not hitting, some of the pieces just not meshing together well. But ultimately, like, Russ was brought in to, for the moments like right now when AD is out, and to be that second guy and to help LeBron. And he just has not done that at a high enough level that has translated to winning. And again, he's put up some triple doubles. He's had some 30-point games, and he has had some moments where, you know, he's helped them win and played well. But it has been too few and far between this season, and he has not, you know, definitely not playing like a $44 million player, but honestly, not playing like a third, you know, best player on a title contender. Like, I think we're kind of looking at Russ as like a fourth or fifth guy, and that is not good enough. And so I think for me, like, if Russ is even the Houston or Washington Russ, and the Lakers got that guy, I think they've won, you know, I don't know how many more games, but you know, five more games, seven more games, and are maybe in that like six mix with Denver, versus being the 10 seed and really kind of having no hope to the season right now. So I put a lot of it on the Russ fit, and now, like, part of that's on the front office and the team kind of making that decision, where I think sticking with the Buddy Hield deal or even standing pat honestly might have been I think a better move than going in this direction. So part of that is on the front office and the organization. But, you know, Russ has not lived up to, I think, even the modest expectations that some people had. Like, this fit has been worse than, I consider myself a pessimist on the Russ trade, and this has been even worse than I thought it was going to be. So it's hard for me to look past that as like, yes, you know, he's had some good moments, he's put up some numbers, but it has not impacted winning the way it's supposed to. And he has not been that second guy that they've needed when, like, I even thought about it last, like, he had some good moments in the fourth for sure. He had the offensive rebound, he had the drive and dish back to LeBron for the dunk, and like, he did make some, you know, his free throw, like, he had some good moments. But I was looking at it midway through the fourth, I'm like, this is a game that Anthony Davis went out a quarter and a half ago, or you know, almost two quarters ago, and Russ has 12 points. And that's just like, the Lakers need more from him. And I know he finished with whatever, 17, 18, but like, they need more than 12 points from Russell Westbrook midway through the fourth quarter in a game that Anthony Davis gets injured. Like, you need 20, 25, 30, like, you just need more from him. And yeah. And that to me is kind of been the most damning thing on this season.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Not to belabor the point, because I mean, you've summed it up well, but it's not just that Russ hasn't been great on the floor. It's that all the guys that you went and got to kind of try to make the fit work have also not really panned out. You know, your Kent Bazemores, Trevor Ariza's, Kendrick Nunn obviously hasn't played. You know, you have like the sort of overall tapestry that you created and were forced to create by trading for Russ and chewing up all that cap space and, you know, being limited to those minimum contracts, you know, has not worked. So, you know, that's, you know, more fallout from the Russ trade. You know, one thing, you know, just to get back to sort of the energy around this team and what it could mean, you know, I do wonder, we're in buyout season right now, and or approaching buyout season, I guess I'd say. And that is the last remaining mechanism for the Lakers to improve their roster and, you know, kind of bolster up for this sort of long shot playoff run that they are still holding out hope that they can go on. And I wonder, and Jovan, you wrote about the buyout market last week and you kind of went through some of the options and guys who could be available and, you know, maybe should be available if the Lakers should target. And I wonder to what degree, and I mean, I don't think that, you know, NBA players and certainly their agents are this short-sighted, but I do feel like as, you know, those conversations happen over the next week, teams, you know, buying guys out, guys, you know, kind of assessing their options of where they, you know, where they might sign to chase a ring, to what degree the Lakers having some momentum right now and a little bit of positivity to sell makes them a more attractive destination than they were before this win against Utah, before the, you know, season felt so completely lost. You know, do you think that the tone around the Lakers makes them a more attractive destination than a week ago? We were talking about that Rob Pelinka is basically having this pie in the sky attitude about, well, we're going to turn our attention to the buyout market. And it's like, yeah, but who wants to come play here? Your team is a disaster. You don't have clear-cut rotations. You don't have a clear path to a deep playoff run. So why would, you know, your high-level buyout guy come sign with the Lakers? Could that be changing given the kind of tone and energy of the last week?
To be honest, I don't think so, just because I don't know how closely other people, like, you know, we're in the weeds with this stuff where we're covering the team every day. We're around them. Like we've picked up on the vibe throughout the season. And I know everyone's kind of tracking everything in general, yeah, at least on like the agent side, but I don't know if, I mean, like we are still talking about the team going 1-1 over like a 7-day period.
Oh, they've lost seven of their last 10 games. Like, let's not get carried away, but
yeah, like, I mean, you know, it's like fine. Like, to your point earlier, like, it's like, this is like what we've come to at like this point of the season is like, we're trying to like find the positivity. You know, I'm like, I feel good about the Lakers going 1-1 over a 7-day stretch, like, and them being positive in their media sessions. Like that's kind of where we're at. So like, I mean, maybe like, I think if I'm an agent and I'm surveying the options, like my one thing with the Lakers is I think, especially if you're a front court player and you're someone who can walk and chew gum and make a 3-pointer, you might be able to get a huge role on this team. Like, I think that there is sort of like the right guy could come in and take some minutes from Stanley Johnson, Trevor Ariza, Carmelo Anthony, because all three of those guys, while they've each had, you know, well, and Trevor, I mean, Trevor had a couple good games, so I'm not going to say like he's had all these good moments, but like Melo and Stanley have played really well, but they both come with their flaws. And Stanley, you kind of saw it last night, like no one's going to guard him. And, you know, like that kind of hurts the offense. And then Melo, teams have targeted him in crunch time defensively. And like, you know, he's a first 3.5-quarter type of guy. And then once you get into crunch time, it is hard to play him. So if you could find a forward or even a wing that can shoot threes at a reasonable level, defend multiple positions, like that guy could come in and I think play 25, like even take some of maybe Avery Bradley's minutes. Like that guy could come in and play 25, 30 minutes a night. So I do think that because the Lakers supporting cast has been so underwhelming, if I'm an agent, I might look at the situation and say, hey, if we agree to sign here. We want X role with X amount of minutes. We think our player is better than, you know, players XYZ. And that could be the attractiveness of the situation. Other than that, I think, you know, objectively, you can't really look at it and be like, this team's a contender, or you know, this is going to put a positive spotlight on our player necessarily. Like, especially with the AD kind of in, like, I think maybe to your point, like, that would be the case if not for the AD injury, because now you might look at it and be like, this team's just doomed. And like, if AD does miss a month, they're going to plummet down the standings even more.
Unless it's a guy who can step in and chew up some of those minutes and contribute. I don't know who that is.
Yeah, it's not good. And unless you're getting, because I mean, the thing is also, most of the guys that I listed as kind of, you know, ranking some of the possibilities, like, it's mainly point guards and big men. There aren't a lot of wings. Like, maybe Gary Harris, but is he going to even hit the buyout market? Like, DeAndre Bembry, not guys that really move the needle. So I think, and even like Tristan Thompson, I thought was someone that might have made more sense. Like, I think he's better than DeAndre Jordan, but he's going to Chicago. So you're kind of saying, like, Chicago, I think that's an example of a team that maybe a year or two ago, they don't get a buyout guy, but they're, you know, top two team in the East. And that's where I think buyout guys tend to go. You rarely see a buyout guy go to a lottery team. It's normally, unless it's a young guy, like, trying to find their kind of footing in the league, it's usually veterans going to contenders. Yep. And the Lakers are not a contender right now.
Well, and, you know, to your point, I mean, you go back to 2019 when the Lakers were sliding and falling out of, you know, the Western Conference playoff picture, while LeBron was, the Lakers were still in the playoff picture when LeBron came back from his groin tear. But, that was a season where the Lakers just did not have the, any real path. And, you know, they were seen as a buyout destination. That there was talk, you know, Carmelo Anthony being kind of pulled off the scrap heap by the Lakers that year. But the season was so far gone that you know, there was almost no point. So I feel like, you know, you're kind of at, you know, on the razor's edge of that, where it's like, nobody's going to want to come to LA. And, you know, who are you waiving to clear space? I mean, obviously, I mean, the answer would be DeAndre Jordan to start, but is it even an upgrade, I guess, becomes the question with who you might be getting. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's just a really, really interesting inflection point in the season, where if you'd said the Lakers are going to be four games under 500 at the All-Star break with 25 games to go, they're going to be in ninth place and Anthony Davis is going to be injured. We would be like, all right, let's just simulate the rest of the season and get to May so we can, start talking about the off season. But there is just this thing with LeBron James, because he's so great and he's playing at such a high level, that like, this team does just kind of pull you back in ever so slightly. And that it keeps you interested, if nothing else. I mean, I think we're on the same page. I don't have any belief really that this team can make a significant run, but they do keep you, they do keep you engaged. They keep you interested. And maybe it ultimately is just theater, but you know, in a competitive landscape and, you know, watching LeBron do what he did in the fourth quarter to the Utah Jazz does make you think, hey, if nothing else, you'd like to see him in a playoff series. And we'll see what that looks like. But I mean, it's been a roller coaster of a year, and you know, that continued, you know, right up into the All-Star break.
Yeah, I think that this just kind of speaks to our difficulty disassociating from our preseason expectations. And you know, I think, because for even as great as LeBron's been, like, this team has actually probably been worse since LeBron's like recent great stretch, right? Like, at that point around like November or so, like, they were above 500, you know, they weren't like much above 500, but like, this team has been getting progressively worse throughout the season, not better, as like, kind of, you know, that there's like a cognitive dissonance there. But I think, yeah, I mean, I think to your point, like, I don't know what any of this means. And I don't even know what, because the other thing here is like, the Lakers have had an easy schedule, and their schedule is about to get a lot tougher over these final, you know, 20 whatever games. So even if we see the best version of this team, whatever that, you know, possibly looks like, they're still going to have to, you know, play Golden State a couple more times, play Phoenix a couple more times, play another game against Utah. They got a couple Denver games. Like, this is not an easy schedule. And so, you know, it's unfortunate that it took them kind of this long to get to this sort of, sense of themselves. But I don't know. Like, I don't, again, like, what is even this team reaching its ceiling over the next 24, 25 games? Is that like 14 and 11, 13? Like, I don't know what, it's not much above 500. I mean, that's just the unfortunate reality is like, I don't see a scenario in which they finish the season like 20 and 5, 20 and 4, whatever, however many games are left.
According to Tankathon, a valuable resource for all NBA observers, the Lakers have the third most difficult schedule remaining, with two games against the Suns, two against the Warriors, one against Utah, one in Cleveland, one against the 76ers, and two against the Mavericks.
I mean, based on the way the season's gone, that's like a 2-6 stretch or something like that, right?
That
like,
is nine. That maybe, is nine and that's maybe winning two 24 games. Yeah, I've been saying they have 25 games left. They have 24 games left.
Okay, so like pie in the sky is like 14-10, and that's like, that would be like an unprecedented, like, you know, a stretch that they haven't had since the first like month and a half of the season.
14-10, and they would still be 500 for the year, which I mean would be an amazing, would be a significant salvage job. I mean, at this point, like, I would have to be feeling really optimistic to pick this team to finish 500 at this point. That seems a little ambitious considering what we've seen and considering what we know about Anthony Davis. Speaking of Anthony Davis, it does not seem like we are going to be getting that update before the end of this podcast. So hopefully we get that information soon and it doesn't completely blow all of our analysis to smithereens. But if it does, we'll come back and we'll do another one of these and we'll break it down then. But Jovan, thank you so much for your insights and for taking the time out of the beginning of your All-Star break as well. You know, the Lakers not as well represented in this All-Star weekend as you might have thought earlier in the year. Obviously, no Anthony Davis was not selected. Nobody in the Skills Challenge Dunk Contest or three-point contest. But you know what there is? There is LeBron James playing in an All-Star game in his native Cleveland, Ohio. I mean, he's from Akron, but come on. In front of, you know, his home fans, which is, you know, for a 37-year-old player near the end of his career, kind of a bucket list sort of opportunity for him, and something that will be worth monitoring throughout the weekend. So we'll be doing that, and we'll come back next week. The team gets back on the floor next Wednesday to resume practices, and then first game after the break is against the Clippers on Friday. So we'll keep you posted on all that going through. I think Jovan has a couple of cool stories coming over the All-Star break to keep you to whet your appetite on all things Lakers. And we'll look forward to talking to you after the All-Star break. Thanks for listening to the Forum Club.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.